Welcome, everyone. This is Jeff Cohn with the Wall Street Resource. Joining me is Brian Freeman, Executive Chairman of the Real Good Food Company. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
So, Brian, for those that aren't familiar with the Real Good Food Company, can you just give us a quick overview of what the company's about?
Yeah, sure. Real Good Foods has a mission, and what it all comes down to is our job is to modernize frozen food by taking out the carbohydrates and sugar and replacing it with protein in all the foods that, all of our favorite foods, the ones, Jeff, that we all really want to eat, foods like Mexican food, Italian food, American classic cuisine. If we can take the protein up and take the carbohydrates and sugars out, we'll have a huge impact on our society and millions of people's lives.
Okay. So obviously that's an important area these days. But in terms of the category, any stats on it? Is it stable or growing, or where does it stand?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start just at the category level. Frozen food in the U.S. is a $58 billion category, growing at approximately a 6% three-year CAGR. Now, when you walk the frozen food aisle, you'll notice that there really are no better for you or healthy options. In fact, the products on the food aisle today that, you know, present themselves as better for you, when you turn the package over and you look at that nutritional fact panel, what you'll see are products loaded with carbohydrates, loaded with sugar, and very little protein. And, you know, that's an important area because, you know, we obviously are doing the opposite. And the reason why, you know, the business has grown so quickly is there's a huge, total addressable market. When you consider that a third of the U.S. population is either diabetic or has pre-diabetes, or 57% of us tried to reduce our carbohydrates over the prior 52 weeks. I mean, Jeff, at the end of the day, I think we all understand that carbohydrates and sugar are not good for you. The more of it you consume, the more likely it is you'll become obese. I mean, COVID showed us that, you know, unfortunately, 40% of all COVID deaths were those who were clinically obese. So, but at the same time, we're not going to stop eating the foods that we really want to eat. So our job at Real Good Foods is it's really simple. How to make craveable, delicious, you know, as an example, enchiladas without carbohydrates and sugar. And if we can do that, we're going to grow fast. We'll have a very large, profitable business quickly. And the frozen food industry is frankly, you know, it's back in the 1980s or 90s. So that's why our view is and our job is to modernize that category in the grocery store.
Okay. So in terms of channels, I assume that's where you are. You're in grocery stand. Are there other channels that you're utilizing as well?
Yeah, today we're in mass, club, and obviously retail grocery. But we do see opportunities in food service in our future. But again, you know, we guided to $150 million, $155 million in revenue for 2022. So, you know, we're still a young company with a long way to go just within frozen food, which, you know, as I said earlier, is a $58 billion category.
Okay. And where do you fit in the stores? Are you in frozen or where?
Yeah. So when you walk into a typical retailer, you'll find our products in the frozen category. Within frozen, there are different segments. So the way most retailers organize the frozen food section is by day part or need state. So as an example, you'll have a door that's just frozen breakfast offering. And there you probably will see our low-carbohydrate, high-protein breakfast sandwiches. Then you walk a little bit further down the aisle, and you'll see single-serve entrees. We participate in that segment as well. Then you might go to the chicken nugget, the breaded poultry section. We participate in that category. And then there's also a snack and appetizer section, and that's where you will find some of our products. So reason why I bring that up, Jeff, is it's unique to have one brand span across multiple frozen food segments within the store. We have permission to do that because our brand differentiation and, you know, our mission is to solve, you know, bring nutrient-dense items to every day part and eating occasion.
Okay. And so, so is that area of the store fraught with high slotting fees, and has that been an inhibitor?
You know, there are many retailers that require brands to essentially pay to get on shelf. However, retailers need to grow, and because we bring new users to the frozen food aisle, frankly, our community, who will not eat what's currently being offered in the frozen food aisle, we actually, in most cases, do not pay slotting to get on the shelf because if we're helping retailers grow their business. And so, you know, now if we were doing a lookalike product, then yeah, you're going to have to pay to get on the shelf. In our case, we've been very fortunate that in most cases we don't pay to play.
Okay. And how about SKUs? How many SKUs?
Yeah, today we have approximately 60 different SKUs. And that's a function of, you know, being in multiple doors within frozen.
Okay. And ingredients, or any challenge in terms of sourcing?
No. You know, I'll tell you, during the COVID period, I think everyone was having difficulty. What we've seen today and the way we see it playing out over the next, you know, several quarters, our suppliers, like us, have a labor force that we're all back to work, and we don't see the disruptions that we saw in the past. The other comment I'll make, which is a real catalyst for our business and why on the last quarterly call we said that we would be EBITDA positive in 2023, you know, we have seen commodity costs come down significantly with the key proteins that we purchase. Chicken, cheese, and to a lesser extent, pork-based products. You know, the pricing on those commodities have come down significantly versus last quarter and the quarter before. And so that's a pretty significant tailwind for us. And we see that continuing through 2023 based on, you know, what the suppliers are doing, you know, with those commodities. In fact, if you went on the, you listened to the Tyson call 2 weeks ago, you know, they were pretty clear about how they are really doing. They're bringing so much more supply onto the market right now, more than they have in the last two decades. We see a favorable commodity trend in 2023 as well as this quarter.
Very good. And now, are you doing this in your own production facility, and is that hub and spoke? And what kind of capacity do you have?
Yes. Yes and yes. So we're talking today. I'm at our City of Industry, which is Southern California facility. When we went public last year in November, we went regular way. We took the proceeds of going public and built a state-of-the-art facility in Bolingbrook, Illinois. And so the two facilities combined give us approximately $450 to $500 million in capacity. We had that conviction to put on that kind of capacity based on, you know, what we call our leading brand health indicators. Number one is velocity. In other words, what's velocity? Velocity is how well is your product turning on the shelf versus your peers? And I can tell you, and I'm happy to report, that our products are in the top quartile. So they're performing well, which validates the thesis that folks really understand the benefits of removing sugar and carbohydrates from their diet. and adding protein. And so based on that, we put the capacity on, and it also, we've modernized the facilities. These are high-speed manufacturing lines, and that's the second catalyst to margin improvement and profitability as we move forward in 2023.
Okay, so are you selling regionally or nationally?
We're national. So, you know, if you go into a typical, you know, mass retailer or club store or, you know, your local retailer, you'll probably find our product in there. However, we still have significant distribution growth ahead. Today, we're in 16,000 stores, but we average only approximately 10 items. Our competitors have 40 to 50 items. So what we said publicly is we believe we can get to $500 million in revenue in the next 3 to 5 years, and it really is just a distribution story. You know, I'll remind the team, hey, we're still a young company. You know, we really have only been in, I think we went into our first grocery store about 5 years ago. And so there's, you know, the growth for the brand and for the product is pretty straightforward. Our job is just to get, you know, more items into the stores that we currently do business with.
So I'm sure some of the investors would like to try it, including myself. So where can you drop a few names where we might be able to find it? And is it all branded under what?
Yeah, it's all branded under Real Good Foods. And, you know, Costco, Walmart, Target, Publix, Kroger. We have the first week of January, we'll be in every Sam's Club with a low-carbohydrate, high-protein enchilada, chicken enchilada, which I ate for breakfast this morning, actually, Jeff, that was absolutely delicious. So, you know, the large national retailers is where you'll find us. And, you know, one thing regarding the recession I wanted to add is frozen food benefits when you have these downturns. I was operating frozen food businesses in 08 as an example. And you can go back and look at that data. And as people, as a consumer comes under more and more pressure, they're going to dine in more and not go out to restaurants. And when they do that, they rotate more into frozen food because it's convenient and it's the easiest way to get what I'll call complicated food. And then in the case of Real Good Foods, you're looking at frozen food businesses just in general, and your thesis is, you know, we're in a recession and the consumer will continue to come under pressure. The other piece to look at, in my view, is what's that company's distribution footprint like? If you are over-indexed in what I'll call luxury retailers, those retailers historically in a recession come under a lot of pressure, and you see increased foot traffic and value-oriented retailers where, you know, the club channel or mass, and that's where Real Good Foods really over-indexes. So the thesis here is we're sort of a safe harbor for those two reasons. Number one, frozen food's going to benefit. And number two, our distribution footprint lends itself to the consumer who is seeking value in their products.
Okay. And so how do you create end customer awareness?
You know, at Real Good Foods, we have the largest social media footprint of any frozen food brand in America. And so I'd welcome your audience to check us out on IG at Real Good Foods or go on Facebook or Pinterest, what have you, and then compare us to any other frozen food brand that comes to mind. In fact, the frozen food business is dominated by three large multinationals. And so if you look at the size of our community and the engagement that's going on in social, and then, you know, I can tell you that we are larger than all Conagra brands combined or all Nestle brands combined. And so by using our digital activation model, we're able to drive demand to the shelf, drive awareness, and it's part of our secret sauce. It's really a unique capability, and I hope your audience will check us out on the various social platforms.
And so price point-wise, where do you fit in?
Yeah, typically we'll be priced at about a 10 to 15% premium to our conventional counterparts while giving the consumer 2 to 3 times more protein and a fraction of the carbohydrates that the conventional items will have. As an example, our enchiladas, you know, they have only 2 or 3 grams of carbohydrates and, you know, 24 grams of protein. You compare that to a conventional enchilada on shelf, you're looking at, you know, 35 to 40 grams of carbohydrates, very little protein. So, again, in a recessionary environment, that consumer is looking for protein to nourish their family. And so I feel like we're really well positioned. That's why our velocities continue to grow quarter after quarter.
Okay. And then gross margins, where are they now and where should they be?
Yeah, so on a, you know, I can give you adjusted or I can give you reported, but, you know, long-term, world-class frozen food manufacturers of scale are going to be between 32 and 35% gross margins. What we've said publicly is we see us in the low 20s in 2023, which brings the company to be an EBITDA positive. The catalyst for that, again, is the new highly automated facility out in Bolingbrook finally coming online and really having an impact in this quarter and obviously in future quarters. I mean, this facility has the, you know, it has the same level of investment as world-class frozen food businesses. So having that come online is a big catalyst. And then, as I mentioned before, we see significant tailwinds on our commodity purchasing. I mean, Jeff, I got to tell you, in Q2 and Q3, we saw historic highs on chicken and poultry and cheese prices flow through our P&L. And I'm happy to report, you know, today we're buying the chicken commodity at significantly below the five-year mean. So much supply has come on to the market. We're actually buying poultry below a five-year historical mean. So, you know, we're seeing the benefit of that, and those two catalysts is why, you know, we said we see ourselves being EBITDA positive in 2023. And we know that that's important. Although we've doubled the business last year and we've guided to coming close to doubling the business this year, we know that growth for growth's sake is not good enough. It's important to be profitable and, you know, free cash flow positive as well.
So what is the growth strategy?
You know, in the short term, it's really straightforward. We're still in our infancy in terms of distribution. So our job is simply get our items on shelf. And because the product that is on shelf today is performing so well, we like our chances and we like, how we see 2023 shaping up. And, you know, on the last quarterly call, we did step forward and provided some preliminary 2023 guidance, and we guided to $200 million in revenue for next year. And, you know, as I said, you know, for 2022, our guidance, we raised guidance 3 times since going public in November of 21. And, you know, we sit there today, 2022, at, you know, around 155. So we think that, you know, we're still in the early innings. And the fact that we built capacity of 450 to 500 million kind of tells you the level of our conviction.
Is that growth organic, if you'll excuse the pun, or by acquisition?
All organic. You know, our acquisition strategy would be in addition to. What we've said is, in the medium to long term, we believe that there's no reason why this business should not be at $500 million in revenue. Once we get to that level, I think that there's lots of opportunity to bring in and fold in, other frozen food businesses, and hopefully one day get to $1 billion in revenue.
Okay. So as we monitor the company, are there any events or catalysts we should watch for, or is it mostly just block and tackle?
I think it's block and tackle. I mean, I think that the quarterly, result is where the rubber meets the road. And that's what we're focused on as a management team. The other thing I would like to add is, we have an experienced management team. In my past, I've been a part of large multi-billion-dollar frozen food businesses. Most recently, as part of Advanced Pierre, we took that company public and achieved a $2.2 billion market cap. And 15 months later, Tyson bought us for $4.2 billion. Our CEO, Jerry Law, was the COO of J&J Snack Foods, a $2 billion business, very profitable company. And he operated, 16 plants and 4,000 employees. And, a lot of the folks within Real Good Foods came from Advanced Pierre and places where we've worked in the past. And the reason why I bring that up is, with these smaller, younger businesses, management really, really matters. And I just wanted your audience to know that, you're not dealing with first-timers, and we know what the rigors of reporting and being a public company mean, and speaking with investors and executing on what you say you're going to do is of the utmost importance.
So, Brian, before we go, can you just tell us why you're most excited and why this is a good place for investors to put money?
The consumer. The demand for what our brand is delivering is exceeds even my expectations when I first came to Real Good Foods. I mean, it's hard to believe this, but it's true. Our product is in 1 in 12 households today. And seeing our velocities continue to grow, like if you pull our syndicated data, we had baseline velocity growth of 50% last period. What's baseline? That is unpromoted volume, just product that's on the shelf. We are turning 50% more that's in growth than we were in the prior 52-week period. So the consumer is all in with us. They agree with what we stand for and what we're doing, and clearly, they like our food. And so all we need to do is continue to execute, give craveable, delicious food without the carbohydrates and sugar and lots of protein, and we're going to win. And that's really what drives me and gets me excited when I come to work every day.
Well, I appreciate it, and thanks for sharing the Real Good Food Company story.
Hey, thanks for the time, and look forward to following up with you in the future.
Thank you.